but the pain wasn't close to the ache, piercing my gut. I snagged a frame, a school portrait. The boy didn't look anything like James had in his kindergarten picture. Who was this child, and why were there pictures of him everywhere?
"He's 5, and he loves to fish," Carlos said from behind me. "He's my son."
"How? You've been gone less than 2 years." I heard him shift.
"He's adopted."
My hand shook. "The infant?" I croaked, barely above a whisper.
"He's mine."
The meaning of these children, everything sank lower and deeper, settling in my soul.
"I'm needed here."
"Where's their mother?"
"My wife. Her name's Raquel. She..."
He broke off and cursed. A tear slid down my nose. I impatiently brushed it away.
"She died, birthing Marcus," he said after a moment. "It was, sudden, an aneurysm. There was nothing the doctors could do."
I slowly turned to him. He stood in the middle of the room holding 2 water glasses, his face ravaged. I was sure I'd worn the same expression in the days following James's funeral.
"You loved her," I said dully. "Very much so."
I licked my parched lips. "Where are your sons now?"
"Staying with friends. They are good kids."
"I'm sure they are." I returned the frame to the shelf and paced the small room, twisting the engagement ring on my finger. My hands shook uncontrollably, and the tremors spread, coursing through my limbs.
"I'm sorry,"
Carlos said in a rough, dry tone. He swallowed and blinked rapidly. His eyes shimmered with unshed tears.
I didn't know how."
He cleared his throat and set the glasses on the coffee table.
"Seeing my children must be very strange for you."
"Who is she? How did you meet? When did you..." I pressed my lips together, hating the desperation in my voice.
"She was my physical therapist. I adopted Julian when we married. Marcus arrived shortly."
He stopped and rubbed the back of his neck.
"Raquel and I weren't married for very long, but I..."
He glanced away. When he turned back, he looked at me in earnest.
"I can't dance with anyone else. It was her passion. It's too hard for me. Dios!"
He groaned, distressed.
"If I had once felt for you the way I feel for Raquel, then I do understand your hell. The loss is... unbearable."
Another whimper escaped my lips. I frantically twisted the ring, rubbing the skin underneath, raw. Carlos's eyes dropped to my hands, narrowing on the band.
"I took mine off months ago,"
he murmured. "I can't..." I wept, defeated. He cautiously stepped closer.
"Or won't."
I rapidly shook my head. The room was getting smaller, the walls caving. Carlos moved closer. He gently rested his hand over mine, stilling my erratic motion.
"I loved Raquel very much. It's been difficult with her gone. But I had to move on. I had no choice. 2 rambunctious, beautiful niños needed me."
My lower lip quivered. "But you're here, James. You didn't die. You're still alive. I need you." Carlos sadly shook his head.
"He's gone. You have to let him go, Amy."
"Let go, baby. Just let go."
Ian's words whispered through my mind. Carlos led me to the couch, tugging my hands until I was perched on the seat edge. He pulled up a chair across from me and clasped my hands with his.
"James was a lucky man to have a woman who loved him so passionately. Tell me about him. Tell me why you need him so much."
"What if you start to remember?" His eyes filled with remorse.
"There will be no start. You and I both know the change will be sudden, if it happens. I don't think it will."
I didn't believe Carlos. James was still with us, somewhere inside him. I studied our clasped hands, fingers entwined and warm skin touching. Was I strong enough to go home without him? Could I move on, while he still lived far away and without me? I sighed dejectedly. Then with grim resignation, I told Carlos our story. Chapter 28. Since the day James had gone missing, I kept everything the same. His studio at our home, the art on the wall, his clothes in our closet. Like Nadia had mentioned before I came to Mexico, pictures of James were everywhere. And I'd held on to everything, dreams of a future with him by my side, hope he still lived and would come home soon, memories of our life together, including one memory I'd sworn to never tell a living soul. It had been a difficult promise, but I did it for James. When he was ready, we'd work through the trauma and heal together. Until that time, he'd been reluctant to discuss the ordeal, or, as I was starting to suspect, too afraid. After the funeral, I wondered if the day would come I wouldn't have to suffer silently on my own. "You're still holding everything inside," Kristen had told me months ago. If she only knew the secret I had buried. I had wished for one last chance to tell James how I felt, how he made me feel that day in the meadow, alone and afraid. Now here he was, and in a way wasn't, sitting before me and ready to listen. Carlos held my hands, the contact reassuring as I told him how we'd met. It was odd, reliving memories where James had played a role, and he couldn't remember a single moment. I explained how my family, not his, nurtured his talent. I shared the story of our first kiss and first dance. A smile curved my lips when I remembered James visiting from college. We'd made love under the stars in our meadow. Then I recalled how James asked me to marry him. I stared at our clasped hands and slid my fingers from Carlos's grasp.
"There's more, isn't there?"
I nodded, tugging at the engagement ring.
"What happened to you?"
he asked, carefully. Memories crept forth, slithering from the dark hole where I'd left them. "We were at our meadow on the ridge, our special place," I said after a moment. James had spread a blanket on the grass. We watched the sunset behind the hilltop, and he proposed.
"I'll paint the sunset for you and many more if you wear this," he said to me.
An opened black velvet box rested in his palm, a square-cut diamond in a platinum setting tucked inside. "Oh," I cried, "it's beautiful." I splayed my fingers and James kissed the space between the first and second knuckles. He slid on the ring. A perfect fit. We were a perfect fit.
"Marry me, Amy Tierney, be my wife."
"Yes." My eyes misted. I threw my arms around him. "A thousand times yes."
"Thank God."
He laughed and spun me around. I squealed. "Did you have any doubt?" I teased, winded when he put me down, my body quivering as I slid down his length.
"None," he said and kissed me. "I have champagne in the car. Wait here."
I watched him jog toward his car and disappear into a thin tree grove. I heard the trunk pop and glass shatter. "Everything okay?" I called out.
"All's good," came a strained response. "Be right there."
I stood, angling the diamond at the sunlight. The gems sparkled. "It's perfect, James," I said when I heard footsteps behind me. I turned and bumped into Phil. He smiled thinly.
"Hello, Amy."
I gasped and backed up a step. "What are you doing here?"
"Celebrating with you."
"I don't understand. Where's James?" I looked past Phil's shoulder.
"He's busy."
His hand shot out and clutched my jaw, his thumb pressing into my cheek. He held me in place. Terror spread through me like spilled oil, slow and thick. "What are you doing?" He didn't look quite right. His eyes glassed over and sweat sheened his forehead. He hauled me into his chest, fingers biting my flesh. Alcohol tainted his breath.
"You're so beautiful."
"Phil, you're hurting me," I cried.
"I'm sorry."
His mouth slammed down on mine. He tasted like gin. Tears sprung in my eyes and fear clawed up my throat. I jerked from his grasp, stumbling backward. James! I screamed.
Fuck James!
Phil's face turned purple with rage. He lunged for me, throwing me face down on the ground, and I landed hard on my back. Air whooshed from my lungs.
Your boyfriend and his fucking brother have taken everything from me. Everything!
He bellowed in my ear.
Donato is my company. Mine!
His hand curved around my skull, pushing my nose into the dirt. I couldn't scream. I couldn't breathe. My fingers clawed at the ground.
I've already taken from Thomas. He's such a fucking idiot. He's got no clue what I've been doing with his precious merchandise.
The sound of a zipper punctuated his words. He hooked his feet inside my ankles and spread my legs.
Now it's James's turn. Donato doesn't mean shit to him, but you. You mean fucking everything.
His breath wind-tunneled in my ear. Saliva splattered my face. He yanked up my skirt and tugged aside my panties. The elastic bit into my skin.
He's taken from me, so I'm taking from him.
He pressed his fingers into me, a thick, dry invasion. It burned. My lungs burned. The rough ground dug into my cheek as I struggled for air. The pressure on my back, the sickening pressure invading me, and the vice-like grip on my lungs was too much. My vision faded, blackening along the edges. Then all pressure vanished. I sucked in air, short, rapid pulls. I lifted to my hands and knees, coughing. Spittle laced with dirt rained from my mouth.
Amy.
James dropped to his knees in front of me.
Sweetheart.
His voice ravaged. His hands ran over me, straightening my clothes, smoothing back my hair from my sweat-drenched face.
I'm here.
Bile rose. I pushed aside his hands and crawled away. I heaved and spewed everything. Everything but Phil's vile touch. I couldn't stop feeling his hands. James came to my side, lifting me to my feet. His hands shook violently.
Come on, let's get out of here.
I glanced beyond James. Phil lay prone in the tall grass, unmoving.
Is he?
He's alive. Don't look. He gathered the blanket and hurried us to the car.
You're just going to leave him there?
Yes, I am. He folded me into the front passenger seat, then slammed the door. He ran to his side, firing the ignition before the door closed. The car squealed away from the meadow and sped down the hill. I started shaking, small vibrations increasing to a full-body quake.
It's over, Amy.
Dry grass and twigs clung to my skirt. Dirt marred my fingernails. I tried to clean them.
I'm dirty. I'm so dirty. We have to go home. Take me home.
Nausea coiled in my belly. We can't.
Fuck!
He banged his hand on the steering wheel. My parents are expecting us. They'll ask questions if we don't show, especially Mom. I want us to get to the house before Phil does.
I gagged.
He's going to be there?
He sure as hell better not be, but I'm not taking any chances.
We'll make the visit with your parents quick. I promised your dad we'd come by after I proposed. I looked in the visor mirror and whimpered. Leaves and grass clung to my hair. Scratches covered my right cheek and jaw. A bruise bloomed on my chin. My makeup was gone. I fumbled for my mascara and tried to apply the liquid kohl. It smeared on my cheekbone. James swerved to the side of the road and grabbed a towel from his gym bag. His hands shook as he poured water on the towel.
Look at me.
He gently cleaned my face.
You can't tell anyone about Phil. Your parents, my family, our friends, no one can know what happened. Do you understand me?
He dabbed dirt from a raw scratch on my jaw. I jerked, and he shushed.
There's shit going down at Donato, and Phil's involved.
He grabbed my purse and dug out the concealer. He patted the powder on my cheek, blending the makeup into my skin.
I'll take care of Phil. He'll never hurt you again.
He unscrewed the mascara tube.
Here, look up.
I did, and with his steady painter hand, James applied the mascara.
It's my job to protect you. I'll always keep you safe.
You hear me? I sucked in my lower lip and nodded.
Look at me, sweetheart.
Our gaze is locked, and the intensity of his rage scared me. his eyes glass hard, his face rigid steel. I'll make sure Phil stays away. He won't touch you. Blood trickled down James's temple and I whimpered. You're hurt. I touched the knot on his head and he flinched. It's not bad, only a cut. I took the towel from him and poured more water. Dabbing gently at his face, I watched the dark liquid bleed pink on the white towel. I love you.
I know.
James briefly closed his eyes. God, I hate it has to be this way, but we have to go. Your parents are expecting us. If we're late, they'll ask questions. But I have questions, I whimpered. Phil did this to hurt you. That's what he said. Why, James? What's going on between you? James shushed me. He cradled my face and pressed his forehead to mine. I'll answer all your questions when I can. I'll tell you everything, I promise, he said, his throat thick with unshed tears. Until then, you have to trust me to keep you safe. I know what I'm doing. Please, please trust me. Okay, I conceded, and forced Phil from my mind, to an unreachable corner of my soul. We drove to my parents' house and plastered on smiles. We toasted with champagne, finishing a bottle among the four of us. The more I drank, the easier it was to forget what had happened in our meadow. Then we walked to James's parents' house and did the same thing all over again. The house was quiet when we arrived. Is anyone home? I asked James as we walked into the living room. Champagne chilled in a sterling silver bucket on the sideboard. At least we'd been expected. Worry clouded James's face. He glanced around the room. His father had been ill. I folded my hand in his.
Let's go find your parents.
At that moment, Claire Donato rounded the corner with open arms. Congratulations, she sang and hugged James. Claire turned to me next. She clasped my hands. Welcome to the family. We're thrilled to have another Donato. I forced a smile, wincing at the pain in my jaw. You are planning to take our name, she asked, mistaking my reaction. God forbid you keep your surname, or worse, hyphenate your name with ours. Well, my voice trailed. I looked at James. He glowered and went to uncork the champagne. Pop! The noise ripped through the frigid air. I gasped and Claire jerked. She looked down her nose at James. I'd be honored to take the Donato name, I rushed to say. I love James. Of course you do, dear. James poured two flutes. Where's Dad? He's in his room. He's not feeling well tonight. Claire gave me an apologetic look. His lungs have been temperamental today. James spared his mother a glance as he poured another glass. When's his next exam? You know your father. He's more stubborn than you and Thomas put together. James shook his head, refusing to be baited into an argument with his mother. He gave her a glass. She shrugged a delicate shoulder. If your father won't give up his cigars, he won't go back to the doctor. He'll put any visit off until the last possible moment. He's already canceled two appointments his nurse scheduled for him. James didn't look happy. He scowled and handed me a glass. When's the wedding? Claire asked. We don't have a date yet. Perhaps next summer? July? I gave James a questioning look. That will be lovely. You must use our church. We plan to. James wrapped his fingers around mine. He pulled me closer. We also plan to have the reception at the Old Irish Goat. Claire's face twisted. Oh, no, that won't do. That restaurant is too small. That restaurant belongs to Amy's parents. They've generously agreed to host us. It'll be dreadfully crowded for all our guests. Where will you seat everyone? My fingers nervously twisted around the flute stem. Actually, James and I want a small wedding, close friends and family. Family that didn't include his cousin Phil. My stomach clenched. The front door slammed. I stiffened, my eyes wild as James and I exchanged glances. A loud whoop came from the foyer. Do I hear wedding bells? Thomas appeared in the doorway. A relieved sigh left me in a rush. James squeezed my fingers. Thomas approached us. He hugged me, smacking a kiss on my cheek.
Congratulations. Welcome to the family, little sis.
He gave my chin a mock chucking, brushing my concealed abrasions. I inhaled through my teeth. James knocked his brother's fist away. Thomas playfully shoved James's shoulder and then drew him in for a manly hug. In the length of a heartbeat, James pushed him away, his patience with his family at an end.
Amy was just telling me about their wedding plans, Claire explained to Thomas, giving him a glass of champagne. James, I think you should consider Phil for one of your groomsmen.
I felt the color drain from my face. Thomas narrowed his eyes at me, and James clenched his jaw.
I don't want him there.
He's family, James.
We'll discuss the wedding party later, Mom, he said thinly. Thomas set his barely touched glass on the sideboard.
Well then, Amy, I'll leave you to discuss the details with Mom.
He crooked a finger at James. Do you have a sec? We need to talk.
James's face tightened.
Yes, we do.
He kissed my brow and asked if I'd be all right. When I nodded, he murmured he'd return in a moment, then we'd leave. Claire put her glass next to Thomas's and skimmed manicured nails through my hair, straightening the thick waves. She pulled out a dry leaf and arched a brow.
I think you'll make a beautiful bride once we fix this hair.
So unruly, she murmured, shaking her head. She tisked.
You wear entirely too much makeup.
20 exhausting minutes later, I extrapolated myself from Claire and her wedding planning with the excuse of needing the bathroom. Thankfully, the house phone rang, and Claire took the call. I went searching for James. His voice drifted into the hallway from the den. Light spilled underneath the double doors, as did Thomas's harsh murmur.
I can't fire Phil. Grant's stipulations forbid it, he warned.
Through the partially open doors, I saw James standing off to the side. Anger distorted his face. Thomas paced the room.
I'll handle Phil, James replied. He's not your responsibility. Listen, I have a plan.
Their voices lowered. I held my breath, straining to hear. Only muffled tones reached me.
You bring the DEA into this and we all go down, Thomas accused when James finished his explanation. Then let me deal with him. My plan will work.
Bullshit, Thomas exploded. Your plan is crap. Phil's too unstable. You'll get yourself killed. I gasped, slamming a hand over my mouth.
Jesus Christ, keep your voice down.
James's eyes darted toward the den's entrance. I drew away from the door. What was going on?
Give me a year to terminate Phil's operations, Thomas implored. 2 tops to cut him off.
No, we need to deal with Phil now. I'm done waiting, James snapped.
And I'm done turning my head like everyone else in this family when Phil exports merchandise purchased with dirty money. The illegal shit stops now or I'm out.
Thomas rubbed his face.
I need time, James. You're not giving me any.
A wide hand firmly latched on to my shoulder. I jolted, spinning around. Edgar Donato held me with his steel gaze. He pressed an index finger to his lips and smiled, almost jolly.
Come with me.
Between the champagne and what I'd heard, confusion clouded my head. My gaze darted between James and his father. Enormously overweight, Edgar wobbled ahead with a cane, dragging an oxygen tank behind him. The wheels squeaked over marble tiles. With one last glance through the door crack, I trailed after Edgar. I would ask James later what Thomas had meant. One thing was for sure. I wanted James out of the family business as much as he did. Edgar led us into the library and went straight for the liquor cabinet. He uncorked a crystal decanter filled with an amber liquid. He poured 2 fingers into one glass and 4 into another.
Should you be drinking?
I asked when he handed me the smaller of the 2.
My dear, he started, clearing a throat thick with mucus. My health is way past the point of no return. Not much help I can do other than assisting it along the course it's taken.
He raised the glass to his lips and chuckled.
Bottoms up.
He drank half the glass with the first gulp and added,
Welcome to the family.
I sniffed the liquor and took a hesitant sip. Edgar tapped the bottom of my glass, angling the crystal higher against my mouth. I gulped quickly. Whiskey burned a ditch in my throat and dug a hole in my belly. I gasped. Edgar laughed, shoulders twitching.
You'll need more of that if you want to survive the family you're marrying into. Might as well start now.
With the whiskey topper on the champagne from earlier, my head felt light and fuzzy. My stomach twisted. Edgar retreated to a wingback chair and settled down. He adjusted his cane and tank. A coughing fit consumed him, loud and rough, flooded in phlegm. His entire body quaked.
Don't worry, he choked, spent. You'll get used to it. The more you drink, the better it'll taste. One day.
He pointed at the scotch with his cane.
Johnny Walker may be the only thing keeping you sane in this family.
My eyes fleetingly skipped to the door. I swallowed, feeling uneasy. In all the years I'd known James, I'd never been alone with his father. Before tonight, Edgar and I hardly spoke.
Come, come, sit.
He patted the chair beside him. I sat and braved another taste of the fire in my glass. Last one, I promised myself.
I like you, Amy. Always have. Your parents are good people, too.
My brows arched high.
You're good for James. He needs you.
He smiled, and his eyes turned sad.
Thomas is so much like his mother. He has a relentless purpose that borders on ruthlessness. Thomas believes he can single-handedly take on the world. But James...
Edgar nodded his head.
He reminds me of my younger brother. Spirited. A dreamer.
I'd never get in the way of his dreams. I couldn't force him to be someone he wasn't. I stopped, remembering who I was speaking to. The man who'd kept James from pursuing the life he'd wanted. I cleared my throat and stared into my glass.
Advice I should have heeded decades ago. I am afraid.
His voice drifted, gaze wandering. I frowned at his frankness. Perhaps it was a reaction to his medication. That would explain his unexpected openness. Then it struck me. The unfocused stare and the quiet acceptance of his condition. The ease of temperament that comes in the sunset years while reflecting on a life full of regrets. Edgar Donato was lonely, and very much alone in a world I was only beginning to realize James had kept away from me. When he remained quiet, I asked him,
"What are you afraid of, Mr. Donato?"
His head popped up.
Oh, nothing.
Coughing into his fist, he cleared his throat. The fit ensued, the coughs harsher. I went to the liquor cabinet and poured a glass of water for him. While he regained his composure, my eyes perused the room, drifting to the framed Donato family crest on the opposite wall.
"I remember when James brought your crest to school for share day," I said, making conversation. "That was years ago. He told me all about the eagle."
"What eagle?" choked Edgar.
"The one up there, your family's crest."
Edgar shifted, looking up. He barked in laughter.
"That's not my family's crest, it's Claire's."
Tossing back his glass, he finished his whiskey. My mouth fell open.
"Amy, you ready to go?"
I spun in my chair. James stood in the doorway. Chapter 29
"Amy, are you all right?"
I blinked at Carlos. He sat stiffly in his chair on the other side of the room, his face pale. I looked around, dazed. I must have been pacing while I spoke. My fingers were latched tightly on the engagement ring.
"Amy,"
he questioned in a firmer tone. I took in everything around me. Walls painted a burnt orange, mahogany wood flooring, bold furniture with decorative pillows. A woman's touch. Toys stacked in one corner, cleaned up for the day. And numerous pictures portraying a once-complete family that had lost their mother. Carlos was needed here more than I needed James. I understood that now. Looking back at our relationship, While I had loved him something fierce, I also saw our faults. James was good at putting off the things that made him uncomfortable, and I was too agreeable. His family should have been told about Phil. As Carlos stared at me with an appalled expression, I realized marrying James might not have been the best thing for me. In the 19 months since he'd left for Mexico, despite how difficult those months had been, I'd become a stronger, more confident person, and I didn't want to lose the life I'd created for myself. A voice whispered in my head, one I hadn't heard in a while.
It's okay to let go, Amy.
My eyes widened. It had never been James speaking to me in the wind, touching me with a tear. It was me, the part that was brave enough to move forward, the part that knew I was capable to make it on my own. Carlos crossed the room to me. I slid the ring from my finger for the first time since James had put it on. It had been a perfect fit, but perfection can be an illusion. I stared at my naked finger, the band of pale skin, pink and tender. I lifted Carlos's hand and placed the ring in the center of his palm.
What are you doing?
He fisted his hand around the ring. What I should have done a long time ago. I once promised James never to interfere with his dreams. In fact, I hated when he kowtowed to his parents. I wanted him to leave Donato Enterprises, open a gallery, and paint. He would have had a richer, more fulfilling life. He was going to do it right before... I swallowed and took a heady breath. Right before he died. I lifted my gaze to Carlos and finally found James. But look at you. You did do it. You're living the life you'd hoped to achieve. I won't take this from you. I won't force you to be someone you aren't. I'd never force you the way your parents had.
Amy,
no, this is good. You'd wanted your own family because the one you grew up with was so...
dysfunctional,
Carlos supplied. To put it mildly, I gave him a smile of understanding. Your boys need you. And I was needed back home. I missed my cafe, the fresh brewed coffee and warm spices, the sugary scent of cakes and scones, the jingle of the door opening for a new customer, or the return of someone familiar. I missed my chef, Mandy, and Emily's scheming, always looking to make an extra buck with her bets. Most of all, I missed Ian. Amy's wouldn't be what it was today without him. I wouldn't be where I was today without him, emotionally and physically, and every level between. I didn't want to lose him.
Dios, Amy, everything you told me.
Carlos swore again, rubbing the back of his neck.
Will you be okay?
He frowned, unconvinced when I nodded. I'd spent hours sharing memories, some blacker than others.
Are you sure?
I looked inward. With the darkness exorcised, I recognized the calm acceptance of my situation. It had been there for some time, patiently waiting for me to grasp hold. Nadia would be impressed. I was moving on. For once, I'm positive I will be okay. Better than okay. It was 3:30 a.m. when Carlos dropped me off at Casa del Sol. I stood alone on the walkway as he drove off, waiting until his taillights disappeared. I had no idea when I'd see him again, if I'd see him again. The finality of our relationship seemed more permanent at this moment than it had when I'd buried his body. Imelda intercepted me as I dragged myself through the lobby. Her clothes were rumpled, hair disheveled. She looked exhausted.
Thomas is here, she warned.
My gaze snapped to hers.
Where? The bar.
I looked through the wide entrance to the hotel's lounge. Underneath dimmed lights, the bartender methodically wiped the counter. The place was empty except for a lone man sitting at a table along the far wall. A single bottle and one glass kept him company. The bartender looked up when I entered and followed me to Thomas's table. He set a clean glass on the wood surface as though he'd been expecting my arrival, and then retreated behind the bar again. I slid into the chair across from Thomas, and he slowly raised his head. Dress shirt unbuttoned at the collar,
tie loosened and suit wrinkled, he appeared years older than the last time I'd seen him. That was several weeks ago, when he'd come to the cafe for coffee. The lines on his face had deepened. He poured several fingers into the empty glass. Amber liquid splashed around the base.
He loved you very much. Both of my brothers and I cared for you in our own demented ways,
he said wryly. I inhaled a sharp breath. He gave his head a slow shake.
No more secrets. That's not my family's crest. It's Claire's.
Something shifted inside me, bringing clarity. Phil's your brother.
Uncle Grant's son and Mom's. She and her brother Grant were very close before he hired Dad and Mom fell in love with him. Dad took her surname when they married. I think it helped in his position as president of Donato.
No wonder James kept so much about his family from me. He must have been ashamed about his mother and her own brother. And Phil was a product of that union. The Donato family hid that secret well. I dropped my gaze to the table, considered the whiskey in the glass, then looked back at him. He was right. No more secrets. I don't believe for a moment Phil cared about me. He attacked me the day James proposed. Thomas lurched back.
Fuck, Amy. I didn't know.
He looked away from me, staring off into the corner.
It all makes sense now. Why James was hell-bent on getting rid of him.
Where is he? He turned back to me.
Phil, he won't bother you again.
His words sounded final. What happened to James? Why did you lie to us? 19 months of pain and loss poured out with those questions. Salty tears beaded in my eyes.
I was protecting him from Phil, who was trade-based laundering using Donato Enterprises as cover. He'd purchase our furniture with drug money and arrange for it to be exported to Mexico. The cartel then sold the furniture for pesos, thus getting their money back into the banking system.
He explained in a gravelly tone.
Phil wanted to ruin us. Uncle Grant left Donato to my father, and my father gave it to me, not Phil. Phil felt entitled to the business. They've taken everything from me.
Phil's words came rushing back. I'd thought him insane.
Dad and I were cooperating with the DEA, who were after bigger fish than Phil. We had to pretend we didn't know what he was doing so he'd keep his operations going until the DEA got what and who they were after. The people Phil worked for, they wouldn't hesitate, killing anyone who found out what Phil was doing.
I remembered James and Thomas arguing. James had wanted to bring in the DEA, but Thomas had already been working with them. James didn't know the DEA was involved, I surmised. Thomas shook his head.
Dad and I agreed. The fewer who knew what was going on, the less risk to us and the company. In retrospect, I should have told James. He's whip smart. He did our finances and discovered pretty quickly what Phil was doing.
And you didn't do anything about it when James told you? I gasped.
I couldn't. There was already a plan in place, but James grew impatient with my lack of action and interest. He took off to Mexico on his own and confronted Phil. Now that I know what Phil did to you, I think James had a lot of pent-up rage inside him.
He did. James had gone ballistic when I'd wanted to take down the painting of our meadow.
We will not let that sick fuck control our lives, he told me. I have no idea what happened when James met up with Phil, Thomas was saying. We may never know unless he remembers. Phil said they went fishing and that James fell overboard, so that's the story I went with. I think Phil tried to kill him.
Words failed me. It was too much, all the issues with his family James had been struggling with while trying to protect me.
Because of the DEA case, I had to let everyone believe James had died. They needed to keep Phil engaged in his activities, not running off on a manhunt if he learned James was still alive. James might not have survived another attempt on his life. And if the Mexican cartel knocked off Phil, there went the DEA case.
He thumbed his chest.
I kept James hidden to protect him.
But you left him here, I cried.
He was only supposed to stay hidden a few weeks, 3 months tops. But the weeks turned into months, soon a year. The DEA took longer to do what they needed to get done. By then, James was heavily entrenched in his new life as Carlos.
He'd met his wife.
He was already married, with a kid on the way. He fell hard and fast for Raquel.
Thomas tossed back my whiskey, since I hadn't touched it, then stared into the empty glass.
I thought for sure you'd find out sooner. Your PI almost bled me dry. He threatened to tell you where James was. I had to pay him off to shut him up.
Like he'd paid off Imelda. He'd paid me off, too. This was too much to digest. Besides, I'd heard enough. It was time to go home. I stood and smoothed my skirt.
Thomas's head snapped up. He snagged my wrist. I'm sorry, Amy.
My gaze slowly rose from his fingers clasped around my wrist to his face. I'm not the one who needs your apology.
How is James? Is he coming home?
No. He's needed here. But he has questions. Make sure you see him before you leave.
What about you? Are you going home?
That's where I belong. My cafe. His grip tightened.
I knew you could do it. I told Joe.
I stiffened and Thomas grinned.
It was me. I covered your lease during build-out. It was the only way I could get Joe to agree.
I yanked my arm from his grip.
Yeah. Well, I wanted to help.
He dragged himself out of the chair and stumbled toward the bar, collapsing on a stool. I turned to leave, but stopped. Did James really go to Cancun?
Thomas shook his head. He wanted us to think he was there and not chasing Phil.
And the casket? What was inside? He gave me an empty look. James's funeral, I explained. What was inside his casket?
Sandbags.
He shrugged like it was of little consequence. I briefly glanced away and momentarily closed my eyes. When I looked back, Thomas faced the bar, head supported in his hands. Without a backward glance or word of goodbye, I walked out of the bar and out of the lives of the Donato family. Chapter 30
Open up, Amy!
Came Ian's muffled yell. He banged hard on the door. I tossed aside a shirt into the open suitcase and rushed over before other guests stirred. It was only 5:30 in the morning. I yanked open the door and he blazed inside.
Christ, I've been calling all night. Where have you been?
With Carlos. He visibly swallowed.
You should have told me. I was worried.
I left my phone here by accident. I didn't expect to be gone all night. I'm sorry.
So you talked with Imelda?
I nodded. Carlos, too. He came to my room and we went to dinner. After we...
Did you sleep with him?
He demanded in a strained voice.
No, nothing happened.
I moved closer and he lurched back. I stopped.
We talked, that's all. Is he coming home with you?
I shook my head. From habit, I went to stroke the ring on my finger until I remembered it was gone. The fluttery movement caught Ian's attention. His gaze dropped to my hand, then jumped to my face.
Where's your ring?
I gave it back to him. Ian realigned his body so he fully faced me. His eyes traveled my entire length. I forced myself to relax, even smile a little. His brows bunched.
How are you holding up?
I'm doing... all right. I offered with a smile. I wished he'd say something about us. So, we're good? I motioned between us. He spied my roller bag, a single brow arched.
You're packing.
There's no reason for me to stay. I moved to the dresser.
Not any,
he asked sourly. Nope. Time for me to move on. I scooped up a pile of dirty clothes. If you pack quickly, we should make the first flight out today. Ian didn't move as I dumped the dirty clothes in the case. I retreated to the bathroom and gathered my toiletries and cosmetics. After a quick glance around, I returned to the room. Ian stood by the balcony doors, hands on hips. He gazed at the early morning sky. My eyes darted from him to the suitcase.
"Aren't you going to go pack?"
He shook his head.
"Imelda's promised to help me find Lainey. I'll fly home tomorrow as planned."
I inhaled swiftly through my nose, biting my lower lip. I'd forgotten about his interest in Lainey, Lacey. Dumping the toiletries in the case, I tugged at my naked finger.
"Do you want my help?"
He watched me for a long moment before he shook his head. My chest constricted. Okay. I'll see you at the cafe on Wednesday then?" He gave me a level look.
"I quit, remember?"
"Oh yeah, that's right." I wilted. "Well, good luck. I hope you find your mother. If there's any way I can help, well, you'll let me know, okay?"
Ian slowly nodded and turned back toward the balcony. It was only a slight repositioning of his head, but the movement put miles between us.
He didn't want me to stay with him, so I resisted the urge to ask about us again. He hadn't said anything, so it was probably too late to fix the damage I'd done to our friendship. He'd opened his heart, and I'd walked away, leaving him alone in his bed. Then I told him what happened between us never should have happened. It was the worst thing I could have done. He only wanted to help me because he loved me. I resumed packing and closed the lid, swearing when the zipper snagged on my clothes.
"Here, let me."
Ian gently pushed my hands aside and fixed the jam, zipping the case closed. Then he turned to me and brushed the back of his fingers against my cheek. I sucked in a breath. He lowered his arm and hauled the roller bag off the bed.
"I'll walk you to your cab."
At the curb, he hugged me goodbye. There were no kisses or promises to meet later. He paid the cab driver my fare and closed the door after I was seated. I opened the rear window. "Ian?" I anxiously called as he retreated. "When will I see you again?" His expression was guarded as he roughly combed fingers through his mussed hair.
"You know where to find me."
"Wendy's gallery. At his next showing. Where we would be polite and professional toward each other." I inwardly winced. The cab pulled from the curb and I leaned out the window, watching Ian until we turned onto the road and he disappeared from view. It wasn't until I'd reached the airport I understood I'd let go of more than my hold on James. I'd let Ian go, too. My flight landed in San Jose 19 hours and two layovers later, very late at night. The terminal was several travelers shy of vacant as I stood alone in baggage claim, waiting for my luggage. I shivered, bundling my coat tighter over my sundress, and stared at the rain-drenched windows. The baggage carousel rotated, and several moments later my roller appeared, toppling forward on the ramp. I hauled it over and bumped into Nadia. She grunted, grasping my shoulders. "Welcome back."
"How?"
Ian called. She wrapped an arm around my waist.
"Come, let's get you home. You look like shit."
"Gee, thanks." I followed her to the parking garage. As Nadia drove, I told her about James's condition, Thomas's confession, Ian's admission of love, and how I'd left all three behind.
"Holy shit,"
she said, her gaze on the road ahead. She stole a glance at me.
"You've had one wild weekend. So James is really gone? There's nothing left of him. What a trip."
"Carlos is his own man, with kids and a career. It took me a couple days to accept James wasn't himself anymore. On some level, I understood something was different about him. His touch didn't feel right. It's James's body, but it isn't James inside. Does that make sense?" Her brows arched high.
"In an odd sort of way, it does. That's crazy, girl."
"You're okay without him?" I squeezed her hand. "Aside from losing his wife, he's happy in Mexico. I found it much easier to let him go than I'd thought." She gave me a girlfriend smile.
"I think you got the closure you were looking for.
Promise you'll call if you need to talk. I know you. You'll mull the last few days over and over in your head. Don't bury this. Talk it out. I'm here for you.
Promise. I squeezed her hand again. I was done burying my past. In front of my house, Nadia kept the motor running as I hefted my luggage from the rear seat.
What are you going to do about Ian?
My mouth angled downward. Nothing. I hurt him. He's not interested in me.
Trust me. The man's more than interested. He was very concerned when he called, and it doesn't take an idiot to realize he's crazy mad in love with you. He's already told you he loves you. You, of all people, should understand you can't fall out of love in an instant.
She snapped her fingers. Don't get in the habit of letting go too easily. Give the guy another chance.
We'll see.
I shrugged and shut the door. Nadia drove off once I let myself into the house, a house that hadn't changed or been updated since the day James left, almost 2 years ago. I wheeled the case into the bedroom and opened the beveled closet doors. His clothes stared back at me. I trailed my fingers across the clothing and lifted a sleeve. Pressing my face into the material, I inhaled. My nose tickled. Nothing but dust. I grabbed a handful of hangers and removed James's clothes from the closet, carrying them into the guest room, where I laid them on the bed. Tomorrow I would box everything for Thomas to pick up. He could decide what to do with James's belongings. On the way back to my room, the framed pictures on the sideboard stopped me. There were 4 photos of James. Snapping up each one, I added them to the clothes pile. Thomas could send the pictures to Carlos. For the next hour, I transferred James's belongings to the guest bedroom. Paintings, art supplies, clothes, and pictures. I allowed myself 1 small photo, a snapshot of us, leaning against James's old BMW, which I would keep on my desk. When everything had been moved, I collapsed onto the chenille couch James and I had purchased together. Running my fingers over the worn fibers, I decided the couch should also go. One day. Soon my eyelids grew heavy, and I lay on my side, tucking a cushion under my head. Then I drifted to sleep. And dreamed. Several weeks later, at the end of the day, I was cleaning fingerprints from the cafe's food display case when the door jingled, cold air blasting inside. Feet shuffled behind me. "We're closed," I said without looking. "It's just me," Nadia said. I faced her, rag and cleaner in hand. She wore a burgundy cocktail dress under a wool coat. Her hair was pinned up and loosely coiffed, lips painted, and cheeks reddened from the frigid air. "Where are you going tonight?" She grinned. "I have a date with Mark." "Really?" I absently rubbed at a stubborn smear on the glass. "What changed your mind about him?" "You," she said. I straightened and she walked farther into the cafe, propping a hip against the counter. "I have a tendency to let go of men too easily. Mark's a sweet guy, and he's no longer attached to his wife. I wanted to give him another chance." My brows lifted. "You really like him." "I do." I folded the soiled cloth. "Where are you going tonight?" "Dinner, and afterward..." She retrieved a postcard from her clutch, sliding it toward me across the countertop. "We are going to Ian's exhibit." I looked at the card with Ian's name boldly printed underneath Wendy's logo. Featured on the front were 2 images I hadn't seen in Ian's collection, but I'd been there when he took the pictures. They were from Puerto Escondido. I skimmed my fingertips across the image of 2 men smoking cigars in a storefront. "There are people in his photos," I murmured to myself. "You should go. Give him another chance." I shook my head. "Have you seen him since you left Mexico?"
"No."
"Have you called him?"
"He hasn't called me."
"You already know how he feels. Have you told him yet you love him?"
"Not yet," I said without thinking.
Nadia flashed a grin. "I knew you loved him."
I moistened my lips and studied the postcard. I have to go. Try to meet up with us at the gallery. Kristen and Nick will be there.
I'm not sure.
My voice trailed, and I slid the card into my apron pocket. I have shelves to stock. She buttoned her coat. The shelves aren't going anywhere.
But someone else might.
She let the unspoken words hover, and then she kissed my cheek. I'll see you tonight, she called, backing out the door. A discerning smile touched her bright lips. I locked the door behind her, then went back to cleaning. I scrubbed the counter harder, put another load in the dishwasher, and unpacked several boxes of supplies. It wasn't until I started straightening the newspapers and magazines on the community reading rack I realized I was stalling. I looked at the postcard again. His images were beautiful, and I wanted to see them. What had changed his mind about his photos? I also wanted to see Ian. I missed him. So, what was I waiting for? My clothes were rumpled and my hair a mess, but if I went home to change, I would find an excuse to bail. So I turned off the lights, armed the alarm, and left the cafe, walking the 2 blocks to Wendy's gallery. As with his previous showings, the gallery was crowded. I recognized many faces, Ian's adoring fans. Unlike before, there wasn't a mix of photos from different expeditions. Every picture displayed was from Puerto Escondido. I stared transfixed, slowly moving through the main room. Banner-sized portraits depicting a millisecond of life reached from floor to ceiling. Surfers barreling through harrowing water tubes. Couples embracing, silhouettes against the sunset. Carlos, leaning against a palm, staring off toward the ocean's horizon. Carlos. I touched my stomach. No nerves or anxiety, no sense of anticipation or loss. I glanced at my toes before looking back at the picture. A hint of a smile tugged the corners of my mouth as I realized it was Carlos I saw in the portrait, not James. All the pictures were dazzling, making the room blaze with an array of color. It was unlike anything I'd seen from Ian. Strange, isn't it? Nick said from beside me. I see James, but the eyes are different. Then I don't see him and it's someone else. I thought of Ian and how he'd described the pictures he took of his mother when Jackie was the dominant identity. His name is Carlos, I murmured. Jaime Carlos Dominguez. Can I visit him? I looked at Nick. He wouldn't know you. His gaze darkened. Thomas had us all fooled. Then his expression turned apologetic. Sorry about Ray, he swore. I can't get a hold of the bastard. I smirked. I doubt you'll hear from him again. Thanks to Thomas, Ray, the PI Nick had recommended I hire to find James, was probably on a small island drinking margaritas, sitting on a small fortune. In the rear, a small crowd circled around a picture. Shades of yellow and gold peeked over their heads. I excused myself from Nick and moved closer, pushing through the gathering. Then I stilled. It was a picture of me, and I stared as though seeing myself for the first time. Ian had caught me dancing at Casa del Sol. I had let go, feeling the music. My Caribbean blue eyes framed in ebony lashes had been sharpened, so you couldn't help but stare into their depths. A mass of brunette curls haloed my head and appeared to dance in the twinkle lights. They sparkled like fireflies in gold dust. Was this how Ian saw me? The portrait was moving, taken by an artist who didn't just love the subject of his work. He was in love with her. I wanted to weep. I sensed Ian beside me before I felt him brush against my arm. She's beautiful, he murmured, just loud enough for me to hear. Ian, I started. You're beautiful, he whispered in my ear, making my pulse quicken. I've missed you. My eyes stung. Your pictures are... I shook my head, unable to find words to describe how magnificent his photo work was at this showing. There are people in your pictures. He shifted beside me.
Someone once told me I have a gift. Apparently I'm skilled at capturing the good side of people. I guess I had